CliffCentral.com.
That's correct. Don't miss the Auto Trader podcast. But I'm so glad you made it in just by the skin of your teeth, Simpy, where you promised we would have a new podcast from you and Mash. And you just on the last day of August, because you did say to me before the end of August, the last day of August, they are promoting their new podcast. When does it start?
Today. We go live today at 10 o'clock on CliffCentral.com. It's called the Third Draft Podcast, and we interview creatives, you know, and we find out, you know, the creative process, the business of content creation, and most importantly, how much money are they making? Because some of these people, they used to have a 9-to-5, and now they've quit to do like full-time YouTube, full-time TikTok, and we're like, whoa, 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 how much money are you making for you to be able to quit your job? And some of them are eating very nice, guys. Like,
wow.
And I'm just letting you know that bag is looking very healthy.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of them also pretending that they are doing better than they are. We know that, right?
Yes. Our first guest actually opens up about how sometimes, you know, financially can get very, very tough, where you want to move back home and just be like, you know what, guys, I tried this content creation thing, but it's not working for me. I can't afford to be out and about every weekend, so let me just go back home. And so that's also the reality of it when you take that kind of gamble, that you might get like a campaign that pays you like, I don't know, 60,000 for 4 videos, and then it's quiet for the rest of the year. So,
yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's like so many other freelance jobs in the world. And anyone who's hustling, in inverted commas, is probably doing more than one job. And you don't have a set income. It's very difficult to live that way. You know, you might have 1 month where you do really, really well and you've got lots and lots of money in the bank. And the next month you've got nothing, as you say. It's hard to pay off a car or a house when you don't know what your salary is, when you don't have a set salary.
Unless you get given one.
Aha. But I mean, how does that, how many people have that happen to them? You know, this is not a normal thing.
We did interview one guy who did have he had a car sponsorship, right?
Yeah. So he kind of got given a card. And then he was just like, great, this is amazing. But that those are just some of the perks, you know?
Yeah.
That's just some of the perks to this content creation. There's a chick who's a full-time travel content creator. Like, I'd love to be her, where she gets paid to go out and just review different hotels and go to various concerts all over the world.
Nice.
But she also talks about the downside, where it's like sometimes you can't be honest about your experience, where you're like, wow, you know, the travel industry is full of like, what, six?
Where?
So then hotels and whatnot. Where?
So you say something nice about a little shitty 3-star place every now and then, but you get to go to your 5-star place the rest of the time. Where? You know?
But yeah.
Someone was telling me the other day, I think we even discussed it on the show, is these people who rate stuff. I think it was with Leanne and Mash on Monday. You know, people who like review restaurants, hotels, shops, products, all that kind of stuff. They review it online. And I don't know I've never read anyone else's review for anything, because I don't trust people. I think people are morons. I don't want to read some idiot's opinion on a restaurant and their food. They don't know anything. I also don't want to read what they think of some contraption that they bought on Takealot. I don't care about your review. If you're just some ordinary member of the public who's leaving their review, I went there and there was a cockroach in my salad. I don't want to hear about your shit. I'm not interested in anybody's reviews, but there are there are apps like Yelp, and you know, if people, for example, I mean, we ask on this show to give us a review on Apple Podcasts or whatever, because it pushes us up the rankings. And for some people that matters. So we have to do it here. I suppose it's the same for restaurants, but I don't read people's reviews on restaurants and products and hotels, do you?
Not restaurants. I think restaurants is a very subjective thing.
Yeah, hugely subjective.
But definitely when I buy anything on Takealot, I will read the reviews.
Really?
I want to know what I'm getting. Yes, because people, I think you can trust people that are not getting paid, you know, because you have no agenda. You're not trying to sell me this. So if you bought a MacBook and you're like, this is an absolutely great product, or it's shitty, I will believe you because you're being honest about your user experience.
Right.
And tech is tech. Like, that's also one thing I don't do, is look at like clothing reviews. I think that's also subjective. Yeah. But technology is technology. Yeah. Like, you know, you can buy online and then people say it was great, it wasn't great. Don't believe you. But tech is tech. Like, it's, if your MacBook's supposed to open up and light up in 3 seconds, then we all know that's the standard. So if it doesn't do that, we understand why you're unhappy about it.
I don't know. I watch a lot of tech reviews. I have to. When you spend that kind of money on something like that, you have to.
You know what?
Just to see if it's working.
So I'm 50-50 on this unboxing thing. Because...
Oh, I love those. Yeah. No, unboxings are great. Where you just see it and they're like, shh.
I know. Like, some of it is, some of it, I won't lie, some of it is great. Like, some things that you want to see people unbox because you're like, oh, wow, the brand new, whatever it is, iPad, or you get to see what it's like. Cause, you know, a lot of this stuff you might not want to buy for yourself, but you still want to see what it's like. There's something exciting about something being unboxed, but a lot of it is also just nonsense. And there are a bunch of these videos. I don't even know how to describe them. They often come up on Facebook, so it might just be my mistake for even watching things on Facebook. But you know these videos where, for example, they're going to clean something, or they're going to discover something under something, but it takes like 5 minutes of you watching this, and then at the end it's really disappointing. It's like bullshit. Do you know the kind of videos I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
I know. They also get me because I don't know what it is about us humans that just want to know, like, what's in that thing, and then you watch and you realize,
I'm wise to this stuff now, because now I know it's nonsense, so I click on it and then I skip right to the end, so I don't watch any of this bullshit in between. But they're like, you will not believe what we found under these floorboards in this old house, and then I'm like, oh, it's gonna be one of those, right? And they've usually got some guy who's like busy with a crowbar, and then he's like, oh, okay, we're almost ready to open this. We're just about to open
it. And then he
does. Like, for 5 minutes. And then there's always some girl in the video going, oh my God. Wow. Oh, it's so amazing. It's like the same girls who do like who used to do those old sex lines that Leanne used to do. You know, like the, if you want to be turned on, dial 7. Nah, 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 nah. It's exactly the same shit. They obviously have figured out that this gets like a lot of dumb men interested, because this girl's going, oh wow, oh that's incredible, but you can't see anything, and it's so frustrating that when you get to the end of the video and there's like something, there's nothing. It drives me crazy when I have to see those things, and I sat through a few of them for a while before I figured out that I was being played. Pure clickbait.
That's all of us, Gareth.
Actually, I caught the other day. Yeah, some people and I actually are getting addicted to watching. There's a guy on TikTok who reviews people packing things.
Oh,
like,
wow.
He's so filling cool. up all
the, like, filling up the containers. And he sees, like, if you're filling up your container with sugar, he sees if you, like, fill it to the top, or sweets, or packing the fridge.
And he's actually entertaining. No. But it's his commentary as he's watching those videos. So I can watch videos like that with no commentary whatsoever. And I'm like, yes, girl, like, this, pack this up. And then he'll be like, oh no, you don't fill it up to the brim. Or like, you'll be like, oh no, Sarah. Oh, I wish someone could fill me up like that. Oh, girl, you're doing such a great. Yeah, and then he'd be like, oh, you're cleaning that so well. And it's like, oh, yes, I wish someone could fill me like that. And then he did a great job. He'll like run away and be like, oh, you did such a great job.
And then he runs out the frame. Yeah.
It's like Chris says.
Yeah, he's a bit of.
Chris says you should watch Bad Unboxing by iDubbbz. He apparently opened his P.O. box up to the internet. The amount of dildos, Trump posters, and copies of Mein Kampf he receives is ridiculous. Oy, oy, oy.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh, I hate those videos where they keep you strung along. It's so annoying. It's the tits, Gareth, says Carl. They get us with the tits. Be careful. They're lovely, but man, you could waste a whole day with those tits. Exactly right. Hmm.
Oh man. It's even when they do the pranks, the so-called pranks, and they'll be like in the same bed as they partner, and they're like, they're sleeping, and mm-hmm. then they do like 50,000 things, yeah. and you're like, there's no way someone's right. sleeping through this. And then it's like, boom, prank. And you're like, stop lying to us, y'all. Stop.
Yeah,
stop lying.
Or they're those ones, you could see it's like totally set up, and the guy goes and he changes their bed mattress for like a water bed, and then the wife gets in and she's like, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. But it's so fake. Hate that. It's dumb.
We're on to you guys. Respect us.
Dumb.
These people just get paid for watch time.
Well, you see, they try to snare you in, because if they can show, again, this is algorithms, and that's why I hate this stuff. Mm. It's just so fake. The whole thing is it's a bad incentive structure. Because what it does is it makes people make these very long, very boring videos where nothing happens, only for a reveal right at the end that is never worth it. It's almost like, you know, you get an ice cream, but by the time you eat it, it's all melted. That's how it feels. Horrible. Yeah. So St. Peewee's got a new show that starts today at 10 a.m. You got to listen to that. That's going to be fun. Live today, 10 a.m. And we've got a couple other things that we've got to get to this morning. You wanted to talk about podcasting, Ryan, and we never really, you know, we never look ourselves in the mirror and talk about podcasting much, because we just take it for granted that people know what we're doing. People listen.
Yeah. No, I think it's podcasting. We talk about in the office, like, you know, whenever we get in, we always talk about like the new podcast that we're listening to and what we should, you know, we all like give each other podcasts to listen to. And it made me think, like, what was the very first podcast that you listened to get into podcasting? Because I'll never forget the first one I watched.
What was that?
And it was so at the time, there was a content creator by the name of Ray William Johnson. He was the number one YouTuber in the world. He had a show called Equals Three. But then he started this podcast with his girlfriend, Anna Connor. And they literally had like a small studio set up with like comic books in the background, and they would just talk. I don't know, just they would engage with a lot of the people, and they had this one segment that even started to take over the show. They had to dedicate shows to the segment because they'd get people to send in videos, and it was called Make It or Break It. And they would give these situations. If you were in a relationship, had gone on two or three dates, then they throw a situation at you. The audience throws a situation. Yeah. And you would decide whether you would make it work or break it off completely. And I was like, you know, back then, that was in 2010 or 2011, I'd say.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, you know, podcasting has been around now for a while. And there's actually a lot more that goes into it than what people think.
You know, I think I started listening to podcasts somewhere around 2007, 8, long ago. So a lot of these, you had to copy like an RSS feed and then put it into it was complicated as hell to put it into the what was then iTunes, and you had to actually download the file because they weren't just available for streaming, so you had to actually have the whole file, and it was complicated. It was really complicated to listen to podcasts in the beginning, but I think I started off, there were a couple of them. I think one of the first ones I listened to was when Bill Maher was putting his show Real Time onto podcast, and they were really just experimenting. So it was a brand new thing. And there were also a couple others that in the UK that I was listening to, but just to get a feeling for what this was. And I can honestly say to you, from about 2012 until now, I haven't listened to radio at all. I've become a podcast only listener. So to me, that's the universe. I don't actually know what exists out there besides podcasts, because there are also so many that I'm subscribed to that I just never run out of podcasts. I've always got a playlist of them that I have to get through. And I do it while I'm doing other things, which I think is what a lot of our listeners do. You know, there are people who there's certain tasks you can do while you're listening, and there's certain things you can't. Like, I love having a podcast on while I'm doing things with my hands. So, for example, I'm washing dishes, or I'm cleaning up around the house, or I'm making food, or if I'm doing training, you know, like exercise, gym or whatever. That's easy. I can't do podcasting while I'm doing other things. Like if I'm typing up an email, there's no way I can listen to a podcast. I will screw it up. I'll make a mistake. I'll put the wrong word in. I get very easily distracted already as it is. So my brain can only do one thing properly at a time when it comes to that kind of thing. So I think I spend a huge amount of time, and also because I live on my own, podcasting is kind of like the soundtrack to my day. So I'm always listening to stuff while I'm walking around, getting in the car, driving somewhere. It feels like I've always got company with me. So it's probably one of the reasons I don't feel lonely ever, which is a bit ridiculous because those people are not in your life. But I think, you know, yesterday I had someone come to see us at the office who listens to the show every morning, and he was saying it's part of his day. He starts his day with the show, listens to what we're up to, you know, enjoys the interaction, has some opinions of his own. Other times he's not really like that interested in what we're talking about, but he still listens. He still has it on and he learns new things, even though it's not something he would have chosen to speak about. So yeah, it's amazing how far this whole podcast thing has come. I mean, just in the eight and a half almost years that we've been at Cliff Central, we've had an incredible selection of shows and variety of people and conversations we would never have been able to have on radio, ever.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And also that kind of time that you have with people, because radio is so short. Like you pushed to, you know, speak for South African radio. America's a bit different, but South African radio, you push to speak to about 4 or 5 minutes at a time, if that. And maybe with a guest, you get 10 minutes.
Yeah, I also like the fact that in podcasting, we're not precious about things. So like, for example, if I discover a really cool podcast, I will share it on this podcast. And I think podcast listeners, we always share things with each other. We're like, oh, I've discovered this, or there's this great interview that you got to listen to, or here's something that you mustn't miss. Even if it's not on our platform, I'm always happy to talk about it, you know. There's some really good stuff out there. Snai says, I watch them when I'm alone and no one's watching. It's just weird. I don't know if you're talking about those long videos on Facebook or whether you're talking about podcasts, but okay. Tracy says, podcasts are my lifeline and a lifesaver while I'm editing. Staring at and editing creases and wrinkles all day on stimulating and riveting stuff. Yeah, that's photographs that Tracy does. So you can probably.
I understand, girl.
You can do that while you're listening. There's some stuff you.
And it's also on demand, which is cool, because if you have to get out the car for a meeting, you're not going to miss the rest of the interview.
Sometimes I'll be so into something. I've been listening to it on the way into work, for example. And then I get to the office and I'm like, oh, God, I got to wait until I'm going home until I can pick this up again.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Chris says that the live comment section is definitely a standout feature of the GCS. Never lose it. Well, as I said at the start of the show this morning, this is something that makes us different to other podcasts, is that we have elements of like the live radio show and the interaction and the engagement with people, which is real. And we change, you know, I don't come onto the show every day with like an agenda. We sometimes have some stuff that we want to get off our chests. I sometimes have a couple of notes scribbled down. Simpiwe has some, Ryan has some, but we know that if, you know, someone in the comments comes up with something that's way more interesting, we're going to end up doing that. And it can change on a dime. Yeah. So while we're on that note, we've opened a new WhatsApp line, 071-783-6214. Tell us what's on your mind. You could drop us a voice note. That's really the reason we've opened it, is that we want voice notes. You could even send video. We'd love to hear from you. And, you know, people are used to putting content up on WhatsApp. So we thought it would just be easier if we do that with you. So 071-783-6214. We'd love to hear what is on your mind. And drop us a voice note. We may even play it on the show. We'd love to hear what you've got to say. Plus, of course, then we get to hear your voice. It kind of adds a new layer of interaction to everything. Podcasts are good when I'm doing those 300-kilometer drives, says Psilocybe.
Yes. Yeah.
The most annoying thing about radio is the voice the newsreader puts on, or the overly friendly animated voice of the DJ. Cringe, cringe, cringe. I haven't listened for so long, I wish I could tell you whether I agreed or not.
No, radio is something else, guys. I think for me, it's them playing the same songs or bad music. I don't know what it is. Like on like every hour on top of the hour, it's like that was AKA da 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 da, yeah. And then 2 minutes later, that was AKA. How did we not just hear this again? Like I think that was my pet peeve.
You know, there used to be a
my biggest pet peeve.
There used to be a radio station in the US. I think it was in the 90s where the station played only 40 songs, but they play them on constant repeat. That's all they did. They didn't have DJs. They didn't have news, traffic, weather, sports, any information, anything. They just played those 40 songs over and over again. And it was huge. It was very successful because people then couldn't get the music anywhere else. We didn't have Apple Music or Spotify or any of that stuff. So if you wanted to hear your favorite songs, you had to do that. So it was clever for the time. Right now, I think it would be massively unsuccessful. All right. Yeah. We've got lots of cool things coming to you in the next little while. And I see one of our listeners here has already figured out it's Ruth. She says, this morning's guest is going to be amazing. He's such a genius, Professor Ryan Blumenthal. He is, and I'm thrilled to have him join us this morning. So let me tell you about this guy, because what he does is absolutely fascinating. He is a senior specialist forensic pathologist and associate professor at the University of Pretoria's Department of Forensic Medicine. His chief field of interest is the pathology and the trauma of lightning. And we'll find out all about this in a moment. Lightning medicine forms part of wilderness medicine. And wilderness medicine is about providing emergency care in remote settings. And that's important, obviously, when considering things like climate change and the impact global weather systems have on humans, especially in resource-limited and resource-depleted communities. Now, I think South Africa, and I stand to be corrected on this, we'll ask Professor Blumenthal just now. I think South Africa is one of the countries that has a lot of electrical activity in our atmosphere. We have a huge amount of lightning as compared with some countries in the world. And that's one of the reasons why it's interesting to study it here. And there is going to be an international conference. I kid you not. There's actually a big conference happening on lightning protection, and it's going to be called the ICLP 2022. It's going to be at the Cape Town International Convention Center from the 2nd until the 7th of October. And it's the first time that any such conference will be hosted on African soil. If you want to find out more, you can go to ICLP2022.org. I mean, who knows? You might be as fascinated in by lightning as we are. You can go and find out more about this. But Professor Blumenthal has also written a book called Autopsy, Life in the Trenches with a Forensic Pathologist from Africa. That became a non-fiction bestseller in South Africa. It's currently in its third print and is being translated into Russian. So, I mean, we're not dealing with any slouch here. He's also got an 8-part documentary called Lightning Pathologist, which aired on DSTV in 2020 and was viewed by over 2.2 million people. So when it comes to lightning...
Shucks!
I know. When it comes to lightning...
He's the guy.
This is the guy. There's no one else. So, Prof. Blumenthal, what a pleasure to have you on. How are you?
Well, it's an absolute honor to be here, but I'm no genius. I'm just a guy.
Oh, nonsense. Come on. Well, you know what? I mean, okay, sure, you can be humble about this, but the fact is there are only a few people in the world who are able to zero in on a field of study as specific as this and who know the kinds of things that you know about lightning, which is why we want to talk to you. We want to get into all of this, find out all about the things that you know, and hopefully educate ourselves a little bit. Also, there could be useful safety things that we could learn here. I mean, I live near a golf course, and I often hear the siren go off when – you know, there's storm weather. And obviously they want to clear people off the golf course because there are often people who get struck while standing in open spaces. You're holding something metal. It's not great. And lots of people get struck. Lots of people die. We need to learn what the safety protocols are when it comes to this stuff. But let's start at the beginning. How did you get interested in all of this?
Thank you for the question. I'm a forensic pathologist. I work in a mortuary every single day of my life. But today I'm out the mortuary to be on your show. So it's good to be here.
Awesome.
But about 20 years ago, I had a case of an African black female found dead in the veld. And her clothes were all ripped off. And it actually looked like a rape homicide case.
Wow.
And then after a thorough investigation, it actually turned out to be lightning. And I thought, wow, you know, can lightning do this? And then I started looking deeply into lightning, and there was very scant literature on the pathology of trauma of lightning. And I mean, from there, I think I've done about 90 autopsies on lightning so far, because we're a lightning prone country. And the pathology of trauma of lightning is quite fascinating. You know, this thing happens so quickly. So you've actually got to look for signs of it on the ground and on the body. And the signs of it tells you about its essence. So it leaves clues of what it is on people and on the ground.
So, Prof, you said just now that South Africa is a very lightning-prone country. Are we in the top sort of tier of countries in the world that experience a huge amount of lightning? And why is that? What are the weather conditions and the geographical and atmospheric conditions that lead to more or less lightning?
Okay, I'm a forensic pathologist, so I'm like an end user. You know, I just get the human body or maybe the animal body.
Yeah.
So I'm not really a climatologist or meteorologist, but I do know that we get about 100 deaths a year here in South Africa, and all these deaths are totally preventable.
Really?
I mean, this is not like AIDS or TB or something like that. You know, this is simple rules, like when thunder roars, go indoors, and you save day. So, but we are a lightning-prone country. Our numbers are about 6 times higher than the United States of America.
Wow.
We're a bit blasé when it comes to lightning here. You know, we play rugby, soccer, we have our swimming galas, we play golf, and we're a bit blasé about our lightning safety rules. So myself and Prof. Jandrell, we wrote the SARU, South African Rugby Union guidelines. So you'll find them on BoxSmart about lightning. So if a storm's within 20 kilometers of a rugby match, you should actually be on high alert. And if it's within 10 kilometers of a rugby match, the game should stop. The inconvenience of stopping a rugby game is less than the inconvenience of a dead player.
Sure.
Sure.
Wow. Okay. So let's again just go back to the science for a second. We'll get to the safety just now, because there are obviously not all of us are playing rugby matches, but we do go outside and we don't think about these things. And you said we're blasé, so we need to examine this a little bit. But what are the different kinds of lightning? I thought lightning is lightning is lightning. You know, it's all the same. Are there different kinds, and what kinds are there, and how can you identify them?
Okay, so crash course in lightning. You get negative lightning, positive lightning, upward lightning, and downward lightning.
Okay.
And 90% of lightning is negative downwards. And the way you remember this is that like 90% of people are negative and down. So you'll never forget that.
Okay.
But lightning does not read textbooks. You know, we've seen some crazy stuff. You know, and lightning doesn't necessarily hit the tallest objects. It can hit you in a parking lot between high buildings. We've seen it go through a window in a house. So it doesn't read textbooks. So it's every single case you have to take on merit and individually analyze every single case, how it attached to the person. You know, how there's so much data. I mean, we got a case now that happened in the Karoo where 96 sheep were killed by lightning. And this happened in 1 millisecond. And by the way, do you know how much 96 sheep cost?
A lot.
Sure.
500,000 rand. That's direct and indirect costs. Lost in 1 millisecond. So, and they were over a kilometer, over a square kilometer. So we want to know, was this one strike? Was this multiple strikes? Is this preventable? You know, what's the differential diagnosis? Could other things besides the lightning have killed it? And it affects every single industry. You know, we all... It affects all cultures. That's why I love lightning so much. It really connects us as humans. So, I mean,
hopefully it doesn't actually connect us, because if it connects us, then we're going to be blown to smithereens.
So this conference that you alluded to earlier, the RCLP, which is the International Conference of Lightning Protection, it's been going for about 50 years. First time it's ever coming to Africa. It happens, I think, every 3 years. We've got 48 countries coming to this conference at the Cape Town International Convention Center.
Wow.
There's multi-disciplines. So we've got civil aviation. We've got photovoltaic vault people. We've got windmill people. We've got mining people. We've got weapons depot people. We've got veterinary school people. I mean, it's really a conference that affects everyone. It's multidisciplinary. We have to talk a common language.
All right. So let's start off with dealing with this immediately, because Sanele and Pumlani both want to know here. The other day we were talking about witchcraft. This is now Sanele. Says, Gareth, please ask Prof. Ryan if it's possible to send lightning directly to someone like the Limpopo folks are said to be capable of. Is there any chance? I mean, can you create, can you actually encourage or attract lightning to a specific place or a specific person?
All right. This is a very brilliant question. And it's something that actually has to be taken quite seriously, because wherever we give talks around the world, someone will come up with some myth or belief about lightning.
Right.
And they, these people, people really believe stuff. You know, it's deep within their soul why they believe things. I mean, here in South Africa, even all cultures have their beliefs. You know, some believe lightning can be sent to steal or kill. Some believe that certain trees attract lightning. Some believe that certain colors attract lightning, or mirrors attract lightning. Certain blood groups attract lightning. I've really heard it all. And the best way, I think, you know, after years and years, like, there's two ways to think about someone with a different belief system. You can either say, listen, it's 2022, get with the program. You know, that's one way to deal with it. Or another way, which I think is a little maybe more politically correct, is just to say, okay, that's your view, this is my view, and then you just walk away.
Yeah, and walk away quickly, because you never know, they might actually believe.
They might send lightning.
Yeah. So, are there certain people who are more prone to lightning than others? Because we know that this has to do with charge and all of that stuff. But a lightning bolt seems like a fairly random thing. We're told that, you know, for example, there are a lot of places that have a lightning conductor outside of them, because maybe it's a thatched roof house or whatever. Is there any way you can actually guarantee? You mentioned earlier how lightning can go through windows, it can go between tall buildings. Is there any way to guarantee that the lightning won't hit you, or that it will?
Well, this is why we have this conference, the International Conference of Lightning Protection. It's actually a super speciality, the protection of buildings and properties, etc. It's a totally random, anonymous killer. You know, it does not discriminate.
Right.
You've seen lightning strike a group, and then some will die, some won't die. Those with the umbrella, those without the umbrella, those with the cell phone, those without the cell phone. You know, this is what makes it. It's like a blind thing that comes down from the sky, whether it hits you or not. And then, I mean, there's cutting edge stuff that the guys are working on now. They're working on, you know, lightning protective clothing, you know, for sports. There's this field really gets quite advanced. If you look, you know, I mean, talking about sending lightning, you know, we got this thing called rocket triggered lightning. Mm-hmm. So if you can induce lightning, then, you know, maybe even in the future, lightning can be weaponized. You know, this is even the latest thing, you know, with lasers or dropping a little piece of copper from the sky off a drone. You know, it looks like an act of God, but, you know, so can we control lightning? This is also like the future.
Wow.
So, this really gets quite advanced. It's a fascinating field. There's so many minds working on this stuff. But look, the simplest thing for us here in South Africa, when all is said and done, is when thunder roars, go indoors. We've got to understand the enemy. So the enemy strike between 3:30 in the afternoon and 6:30 at night. So that's the time you're walking home. You've got to know the weather patterns of your area. So give yourself enough time to get home. What is a safe shelter? Anything inside a fully enclosed metallic surface area. So that's called a Faraday cage or a Gaussian surface area. So give yourself enough time. Know the weather areas. If you've made enough bad mistakes and you're out now in the open and lightning is striking all around you, try walk under Eskom lines if they're still there. Just walk underneath the lines.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, find a bridge or an overpass. Get into a fully enclosed metallic surface.
Is a car a Faraday cage?
Okay, the car is the ultimate thing to be in, not because of the rubber tires, but because of the fully enclosed metallic surface area. Now, we've seen people killed in cabriolets and on breakfast runs on motorbikes. So you want to be inside a fully enclosed metallic car. That's the best place. So if you're camping and you're out in the bushveld on a wilderness trail or whatever, try get into your car if it's raining and thunder and lightning.
Prof, what percentage of people actually can survive a lightning strike? We've all heard stories of people who've been struck by lightning, or lightning struck a building they were in. They felt it. They felt something. They may even have had some kind of physical evidence on their bodies afterwards that they'd been struck by lightning. And some of these people survive. I mean, what is it in your findings and in your experience, what are the percentages of survival?
Okay, so statistics. for every one killed, about 10 will survive. Other literature says for every 3 killed, 7 will survive. So your chances of actually being struck by lightning is greater than winning the lottery. And speaking about winning the lottery, if you really know your stats, the chances of being killed on the way to buy your lottery ticket are actually greater in South Africa than going and winning the lottery.
Oh my God.
By the way, with our road traffic fatalities.
Wow.
Step for you.
Okay, that's pretty scary. My God. When you are called in to do an autopsy of someone who's struck by lightning, are there common characteristics to these things? Or how do you discover what are the obvious physical signs that someone has been struck by lightning, and how do they vary across the different cases?
Okay, so we're doing actually multidisciplinary research here at the University of Pretoria at the moment with the University of the Witwatersrand. So the only difference is we really just work a bit slower on these cases, and we really like take a magnifying glass and look. And we have been totally surprised by what we found. Like, I had a case in December where a guy was struck in Pretoria North where his zipper actually exploded. Oh, and the little metal elements of the zipper became high velocity secondary missile projectiles and actually embedded and melted in his skin.
Oh my God.
This article's actually published. And we worked out the physics behind this. So the zipper, and it happens with necklaces or any chained or beaded objects, you get these little sparks between the elements that and it holds onto the charge, and you get this superheating which explodes the little metal structure.
Oh,
and
wow.
It looks like secondary missile formation. It literally embedded and exploded into the skin. Quite fascinating. We call it, I think this article is called like metallization injury, lightning metallization injury.
Wow.
If you Google this.
Prof, are there common signs that, does the lightning leave a certain mark on a certain part of everyone's body, or does it affect the body in the same way for everybody? Are there certain parts of the body that are likelier to be immediately affected by a lightning strike than others?
Okay, so lightning is multi-physics phenomena. It's got a heat component, a light component, an electrical component, a blast wave component. So like the eye, it can blind you.
Oh my
Three
God.
Months later, you develop cataracts. That's the weirdest thing. It happens in cattle we saw it in swine also. They develop cataracts 3 months after being exposed to the light of lightning. It causes these weird skin lesions called Lichtenberg figures, which looks like you've been slapped with a wet tree fern. You get these arborescent or fern-like patterns on the surface, which disappear within 3 to 6 hours. You get these weird spark lesions. There's a lot of myths. People think like if you're struck by lightning, you become this crispy critter.
Yeah.
That's the crispy critter myth. That doesn't happen. It's too quick. Like we're talking a millisecond, it's like 30 to 50,000 degrees centigrade.
Oh my God.
Billions of volts. But the signs are actually, we don't explode as humans. You know, we get this. If you have a direct strike, that's probably one of the quickest deaths you can have in life. You won't see it, you won't hear it, you won't feel it. You'll drop like a sack of potatoes. I think the only quicker deaths would be nuclear or if there's a sniper with his own weapon through the back of your head. I think those are the quickest deaths you can have in life.
If you're gonna go,
but lightning is, I think, the quickest death you can possibly have.
It doesn't turn you into a crispy piece of bacon,
and
you don't see these people. For example, I've seen these horrible pictures when people are fixing power lines and they touch the contact that the kind of the one wire with the other, and then they get frazzled and completely, they turn into a lump of charcoal essentially. That doesn't happen with lightning.
Okay, so the difference between electrocution and lightning is time. So with electrocution, which is either high voltage or low voltage, you get trapped or frozen into the circuit, and there's time for deep cooking of tissue.
Oh my God.
These are some of the worst things you'll see in medicine. They're of the most grotesque or mutilated cases you can have in trauma in medicine.
Hmm.
However, lightning is just too quick. It's a millisecond. So the signs are chiefly on the clothing and on the skin. They're actually very subtle signs. We've had people found dead on the side of the road here in South Africa. You think it's a pedestrian vehicle accident, but it's actually lightning. So you've got to look very carefully. You may find melting of fibers on the clothing, some singeing of hair, a ruptured eardrum. These signs are quite subtle. You've actually got to seek them out.
Prof, you said deep cooking of tissue if you're electrocuted. That's horrific. Yeah. But what is it? The volts, or is it the current, or is it the potential difference that is the thing you should watch out for when it's either lightning or if it's a electrocution? What's the thing that kills you?
Okay, look, electrocution, it's the current, you know, but it depends obviously under what voltage it is. So I like to think of current like mice with sharp teeth that get pushed out and bite, like, you know. So the current is the thing that kills and bites you. But lightning, well, as I said, it's multi-physics phenomenon. So there's a light component, there's the heat component, there's the electrical component, right, and there's a blast wave. This blast wave actually is like a bomb. Within 10 meters of the strike, it literally looks like you've been near a bomb. That's why in the beginning, that woman that was found dead in the field, that looked like a rape homicide case, her shoes were blown off. I mean, leather, try to tear leather.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you're talking significant forces here. And how far can you hear thunder from, just by the way? 25 kilometers away.
Yeah. Is it true, just on that, note, is it true that if you hear thunder and you count the number of seconds, that's how far away it is?
Okay, so we've got this rule called the 30-30 rule. So if there's 30 seconds between flash and bang, you're at risk. So if you see the flash and you start counting, if it's within 30 seconds, you're at risk, and you should wait 30 minutes after the last rumble before you go back to the soccer pitch.
Oh,
or
wow. Okay, no. That's often the case. I mean, usually it's much less than 30 seconds, right, on the high felt.
Yeah. Now, the high felt, we're coming into lightning season now, so it's quite gray and drab, and you know the skies look dull now, but let me tell you, there are thunderstorms ahead. Ooh. And we have got, I mean, people will travel to Norway or whatever to see the northern lights, but a thunderstorm on the South African high veld is one of the most spectacular weather phenomena on the planet.
Oh yeah,
we really must be proud of it.
Well, I mean, everybody's seen those beautiful long exposure photographs that people take of, you know, Johannesburg in the late afternoon, evening, as the lightning starts to come down, and it's just absolutely beautiful. It looks, I mean, this is. So it's beautiful and it's alive. It's not it's watching physics happen before your very eyes, and you know, you live in a place where there's just so much of it. You gotta kind of appreciate and take it in. Okay, we got a lot of questions from people here. Let me go to a couple of these. People want to know about climate change. Has climate change affected the prevalence of lightning? Is there more lightning now than there was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago? What kind of records do we have? And how do you project the amount of lightning going forward?
Okay. Once again, I'm but a mere forensic pathologist, just sure, an end user. So I'm no climatologist. You may have to invite a climatologist. However, at these conferences, they do talk about climate change, and they do predict more thunderstorm, like, you know, more drier spells and more wetter spells, and they say with more thunderstorms will become more lightning. So this is what I have heard when I've attended some of these conferences, but yeah, I cannot say more than that at the moment. At the moment in Pretoria, where I am now, we've got about 40 to 70 thunderstorm days per year.
I know Simpiwe and Ryan, you've scared the hell out of them. So Simpiwe's eyes almost popped out of her head just now when you talked about that woman being blasted and her shoes being blasted off and deep cooking of tissue, and oh my God. So, Simpiwe, you go. I know you've got questions.
Yes. Like, my grandmother is one of the smartest people I know. And when there's lightning, she's like, everyone must be indoors. But she also says we must cover the mirrors. Does that help? Is there any truth in us covering up all the mirrors in the house when there's lightning?
Well, that's the thing. You know, if we go back in time and look at history, I think all cultures understood that lightning was dangerous. And I think through the generations, all cultures on earth will have their beliefs about lightning. And it's just like saying simply like, hey, lightning is dangerous. Just be careful. I mean, they didn't understand the, you know, the tripod theory of lightning in the clouds, you know, 300 years ago. So, you know, we've got now a modern understanding of lightning, but we still all know that lightning is dangerous. As a forensic pathologist, it is the weather phenomenon that I'm doing the most autopsies on. I've done more autopsies on lightning cases than on floods or tornadoes. That's or hurricanes. Lightning is what keeps me busy as a forensic pathologist. It's dangerous. That's what your grandmother's saying.
Wow. Ryan, you got some things you want to ask the prof?
I'm hoping that there's no stupid questions, but I was always, like my mom always told me when I was growing up, whenever there's lightning, stay away from water. So don't take showers. Try stay out like the bathroom area. I just wanted to find out if that was true.
Right. So look, if you're going to have a bath or a shower during an electrical thunderstorm, I would rather have a bath. Okay. Hmm. But I would, because a bath is ceramic, I wouldn't have my foot resting on the chrome tap. You know, that would be dangerous. And if you think about it, like if you're in a shower, there's more contact time between the chrome taps, the water, the chrome. So actually your chances of dying are marginally greater in a shower than in the bath.
Huh.
However, I would do neither, actually, you know, and unplug everything. If you're floating in the water, you're fine. You'll have flashover. But if you're standing in the water, you're at risk. So we've seen people like on the beach get struck dead or, you know, on the shore standing, because then it gets grounded. But if you're floating, that's why you don't get whales washing up on the shore or fish. They don't get struck and die. It flashes over them if you're swimming, if you're floating.
Hmm. I always wondered about that, actually.
Okay. Yeah, look, electrocution in water is a super speciality. Underwater welders, knife fish, electrocution in the bathtub, this is a super speciality in forensic pathology.
Now, you know, Prof, this is fascinating stuff. And I mean, doing autopsies, and you've written this book, which I encourage anybody to read as well, Autopsy, Life in the Trenches with a Forensic Pathologist from Africa. You've done so well with that book because I think people are fascinated with the different ways that we can die. You know, everybody's obsessed with their own mortality. Do you still kind of get the thrill that you did when you first started this? Or has it become very blasé and very kind of daily, this is what I do? Is every case fascinating, or are you kind of bored with a lot of them because it's more of the same?
Well, I think this is what professionalism is about. It's about doing what you have to do, even sometimes when you don't want to do it. Mm. So, and always being curious. You know, you've got to always take notice. I think if you in that stage where you getting bored, you must take a holiday, I think.
Right.
And just recalibrate and then come back, because there's always something new to learn. Here, I mean, every day in the mortuary, you've never seen it all. There's always something that will just, but you've got to always take notice. This is the thing. Little things. I mean, if you shake someone's hand, notice how firm is the handshake. Little things like that. That's what I tell people. Yeah. Just take notice of things and everything.
Observe.
You'll be surprised. Yeah.
Prof, the a lot of people want to know about lightning in general, being struck in the bath, all of that stuff. What about being under trees?
Mm.
Okay, so yeah, that's not a good idea. We've had plenty of people killed under trees. We've had bongos, which is they're quite rare antelope that were killed here in the Pretoria Zoo on the 12th of February 2012. Each one cost 300,000 rand a pop.
Oh, wow.
And they were taking shelter in the Pretoria Zoo under a tree, and at 2 a.m. in the morning, both were killed. Each one cost 300,000 rand.
Oh.
And I actually was attended the autopsies at Onderstepoort. So under a tree, it's the third mechanism. Lightning strikes a tree and actually like almost flashes off the tree. We've seen people, there was stuff trending on YouTube a couple of months ago of people that were killed under a tree at a golf course. So you do not want to be under a tree. You want to be inside a fully enclosed metallic surface area. Under a bridge, under Eskom lines. That's the best place to be. Give yourself enough time to get to a safe shelter.
And if you can't find any of that stuff, what, should you lie flat on the ground? I mean, like, what's the best thing to do? Because you can't – I mean, is it safer to just keep running and trying to find something like that? Or sometimes there isn't anything.
If you've made enough bad mistakes and, I mean, you find yourself on the South African escarpment and lightning is striking left, right, and, I mean, you can literally feel sparks coming off the back of your head and neck. What they suggest, what the textbook suggests, is what's known as the lightning crouch position.
Okay.
So you want to be wet, because if you're wet, you have flashover. If you're dry, you die. So you want to be wet. You want to maybe block your ears because you've had ruptured eardrums. You want to crouch down to make as small of area surface as possible. And you want to try and get your feet as close together as possible. It's called the lightning crouch position. But this is last case worst case scenario stuff. There's nothing. I mean, the other hands together.
This is when you know you're in trouble. You're basically cursed, and now you're just hoping for the best. Jesus, wow, that's quite something. Oh, and Prof, is it true that fat people are more likely to be struck by lightning than thin people?
No, once again, a myth. We've seen every culture, all bodily habituses, everyone, tall, short, fat, thin, every blood group, you name it. That's why it's totally non-discriminatory.
I also had a question. I had a friend who asked me also something. Do cattle explode when being struck by lightning?
Right, so cattle and sheep die because of what's known as the fourth mechanism of lightning injury. So lightning strikes the ground, and it travels like ripples on the surface of the water. So it spreads out to different voltages. And cattle, they're quadrupeds. So their legs are spaced farly apart. And what's between those legs? A heart or breathing muscles. That's why whole herds will be decimated by lightning. You'll see mass deaths. One of the world records happened in Ohio in 1939. You can fact check me. I think something like 800 cattle were killed in one strike in 1939 in Ohio from one strike.
Wow.
That's a world record. They had one in China with 500 cattle, and they had one in Georgia last year, August. Also, I think 500 sheep. So that's you get insane. These mass herd deaths from lightning. And, like, you know, quadrupeds are at risk, but bipeds, we've just got a uterus or a prostate between our legs, so we're fine. You won't get mass deaths of humans, you know, because of the potential difference between the legs. Hmm. But quadrupeds, they get wiped out.
Wow.
But also, question. Can you eat the meat?
Okay, all right. So that is a fascinating question. And we have even watched, there's a phenomenon called delayed post-mortem scavenging in lightning-struck carcasses. So there's whenever I've talked somewhere around the country, some farmer will come to me and say, like, Prof, you know, his giraffe was struck, and we've got hyenas on the farm, we've got vultures, and they didn't scavenge. So we've actually watched this happen. We got delayed post-mortem scavenging on one or two carcasses that in some of our research. But if you cut these animals up and give them to lion farms, the lions eat them fine. And also locals eat it. There's no problem.
So does that mean that a lot of these scavengers are also superstitious, that if something's struck by lightning, they don't want to eat it?
Well, we're not certain about this. You know, maybe there's a smell that comes off after the thing. Yeah. We don't understand it, but it has been reported, and you have to always listen and take notice. So if some grizzled old farmer comes to you and says, listen, his sheep were not scavenged immediately, which normally happens on his farm, you have to say, okay, wait a minute, there's something here.
That's something going on. Can people insure against lightning strikes? Like, are there farmers, you talked about those two very expensive bongos in the Pretoria Zoo. Can you insure against this, or is it an act of God and there's no insurance that'll take any pity on you?
Well, my colleague Mike Grant actually did his thesis on lightning protection of critically endangered species at zoos. And he actually won the Young Scientist Prize in Vienna at the ISLP, I think in 2016. So there are people working on this, and this is what this ISLP conference is about. It's about protecting structures and peoples from lightning. And there's an organization. So if you're going to get lightning protection for your property, just see that they ALPA accredited. Hmm. There must be Earth Lightning Protection Association accredited. Because once again, in life, there's always cheats and crooks. Just see that these guys are accredited. They must have an ALPA accreditation, Earth Lightning Protection Association.
I could talk to you all morning, and I realized that we've just got to 8 o'clock, but I've got to ask one or two questions here from our listeners. So Mel wants to know, is it true that some people have been struck by lightning and then become geniuses? My husband is convinced of this fact. Sure. You don't have to be diplomatic, Prof. If it's absolute bullshit, you could say it's bullshit.
Lightning, in layman's language, it fries the electricals of your brain. You're not the same person. We've had people struck, they can't walk, they can't talk. Their personality changes, and actually it's quite a tragic thing to follow these people up. They go from doctor to ear, nose, and throat specialist to occupational therapist to physiotherapist. They go, I mean, you can't believe the aftermath of a 1 millisecond strike in life if you survive. They get heart arrhythmias. the aftermath is really, it costs houses of money. And, you know, it must be taken very, very seriously. You definitely do not become a genius, though. I can assure you.
So avoid this at all costs and listen to what the prof said. There's some useful safety tips there about what you can do if you are outside when there is lightning. First of all, try and not be outside during lightning. But amazing, amazing stuff. And I think we've only scratched the surface of this. Prof, we'd love to have you back one day to talk about other areas of interest for you and doing all these autopsies, more stuff about lightning after you've been to this conference, which is happening in Cape Town from the 2nd until the 7th of October. It's called the ICLP 2022. And you can go to iclp2022.org. What a great pleasure to have you on, Prof.
Thanks for the thunderous applause.
So good. Professor Ryan Blumenthal. Also check out his book, Autopsy, and his 8-part documentary series, Lightning Pathologist, on DSTV, which has been viewed by over 2.2 million people. Amazing, amazing stuff. Professor, thank you so much. Wow, what an interesting morning.
Thank you.
How's that, Hassan Piwe? How's that, Ryan?
I learned so much.
Loved it.
I didn't know lightning could be this interesting.
Amazing.
And I'm low key like, okay, when are we gonna get that first lightning storm so I can see how I behave now and then, like, look at people and judge them? Low key.
Just don't go outside and stand there and go, come on, make me clever, because you know that's not gonna. All right.
Never that.
All right, everybody, that's it for us. We, you know what, the 3 minutes that we started late for this morning because we were sorting out some Piwe's microphone, we made up. It's 4 after 8. Have an excellent day. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. bright and early. Cheers, everybody. Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com.